Welcome to the second presentation on the proof study dating God's Sabbaths and holy days. The reason for this second presentation is the fact that I have made some what I consider significant improvements, which in fact is going to simplify the amount of calculations, the amount of data that is going to be needed to confirm this study that we're about to look at. This study, in fact, is going to prove that the creation, the Sabbath of the creation week, in fact, is a replication of 7 days to the present. The day that on our Gregorian calendar that we call Saturday is, in fact, the seventh day of creation. And so this is what we're going to be presenting. Now, my qualifications, you might say, are surprisingly little. I, in reality, spent most of my working years as an engineer for three large corporations. While spending my time there, the basic thing that I was doing was solving problems in order to make things run more smoothly. Eventually, I started my own business and started it in a three-car garage. When I exited the business, I was employing 45 people, and that brings us basically down to the present time. The reason that this study actually came about was because I was challenged in the year 2007. A group of men pointed to the fact that you're keeping the wrong days. What you need to do is you need to be able to go out and sight the moon and determine when these days occur. And I thought, well, this is a challenge that needs to be answered. It's something that needs to be cleared up. And it has to be done in such a way that it's not a matter of it's a matter of mathematics. In mathematics, you know, you can check it. It's a matter of adding. And basically, we're not going to be going into anything very complicated other than adding and subtracting. Basically, that's all we're going to do. What happened in that really helped me a great deal was the fact that there was a flood in 2008 here in the Midwest. Some of you may remember this. It was significant enough to make the national news, showing a house being flooded out and sailing down a river. And as a result of that flood, I thought I was in the process of presenting a Sabbath service, and I thought it would be a good idea to look at the Noachian flood. And so that's exactly what I did. I went back and I started working on presenting a sermon on the Noachian flood. And as I went through there, something struck me as being rather outstanding, you might say. And when I first thought about it, I recognized that Noah had, in his description of what took place, had mentioned a lot of dates, a lot of passages of time. And I'm thinking, at first I thought, well, what do I really care if it happened on the second month or it was 140 days of rain and etc. And then I thought, God did not put this information here just to fill up the page. There is a reason for it. And so I went back and started looking at the progression of time during this year of the flood. And I found something very surprising. And here we can see, if we take a look at this, we can see the different lengths of days. We can look at this, and in Genesis 7:11, the flood begins on the 17th day of the second month. Well, there's 30 days in the first month, plus the 16 days up to that the start of the flood. And so if you add that together, you would see that you have 46 days. And next, you go to Genesis 7:12, and it rained for 40 days. And so you put down 40 days. And then the water in Genesis 7:24 tells us the water prevailed for 150 days. And then in Genesis 8:3, it tells us that the water subsided or abated for 150 days. Well, if you add that up, you'll see that the total is 386 days. And in Genesis 8:13, the water dried up on the first day of the next year. So, well, what do we have to do? We have to subtract the day. That leaves us with 385 days. Now, 385 days, I recognize that 385 days was the passage of time in the calculated Hebrew calendar. And I thought, wow, this really is showing some important things that I don't think most people have realized. And so what I was thinking is, what if I was able to backtrack this time element to creation, and that, or come forward from creation to this time of the flood, and see if the calendars based that would result from that would substantiate this 385-day year. The other thing is, if we think about this, there is only a few things that God gives us in His Bible that are, in effect, absolutes. And one of those, of course, is the day. Here we can see, just to show you how the days are followed in the calculated calendar. If you look up here, you'll see under the column of 299, you'll see a 355 number. Well, that number is represented of the days in that particular year. The second year, if you go down, you'll see that you have 354 days. And in the third year, you'll have 385. So you can see why I made that relationship between the calendars. Now, basically, when we look at the creation, people say, well, everything was created in those first 7 days. Well, that's not really true. And we're going to see a statement that we find in Job that is going to give us, I think, a different approach to this idea that everything was created in that first 7 days. Now, it says here in Job 38:4-7, Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. He's talking to Job here. And he's kind of, you know, Job was pretty self-righteous in a way. I mean, he thought that he understood everything. And so God is just pointing out a little fact here. He says, tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched a line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. So here is a statement in your Bible that tells you when the universe, in effect, was created. Now, let's take a look at Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And the earth became without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. Now, you see, here is the statement that confirms the Job statement. It shows that everything had been created, and then it became without form and void, and darkness was upon the face. So there was something that took place between its initial creation and the creation that we're going to be looking at here in the book of Genesis. And the earth became without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, so the evenings and the morning were the first day. Genesis 1:5. And so, what we're going to be looking at here, and what we're going to come to understand, is the fact that when the first day, you see, the first day was created, what really took place? Well, God started the earth to rotate. Well, if you had an evening and a morning, you had to have light, right? Light and dark. The earth started rotating, and the result was of the first day. And God's day is measured by one rotation of the earth. It's not measured by time. As we look at it, the day is 24 hours long. Well, we know that the day is changing. We're going to be seeing that later on. And so as a result of this, we come to understand what is a day. Now, that's important that we know. What does the Bible define as a day? When does it start and when does it end? We can see this when we go, when we read Joshua 8:29. And the king of Ai, he hanged on a tree until evening. And as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that he should take the corpse down from the tree, showing that it's the end of the day. We look at other scriptures. Joshua 10:26. And after Joshua struck them and killed them and hanged them on five trees, they were hanging on the tree until evening. So it was at the time of the going down of the sun that Joshua commanded that they took them down from the trees. Look at this next statement in Deuteronomy 24:15. Now this is in fact a legal definition for the ending of the day. Each day you shall give him his wages and not let the sun go down on it. Well, this is a tractual arrangement that is being made here. And it shows that what? The end of the day is at the going down of the sun. He works all day and you pay him at the end of the day. Next, we can look at Daniel. And the vision of the evenings and mornings, which was told to me true. Again, here we see evening coming first. Again, if we think about this, and we look, we may say, well, this is all Old Testament stuff. I mean, the New Testament is different. Well, not really. If we look at the book of Mark 1:32 and Luke 4:40, we see a situation that occurred in which Christ healed a man in a synagogue on the Sabbath day. And the president of the synagogue took Christ to task for it. He says, look, you don't You don't heal on the Sabbath. You do your work the rest of the week. Now, the president of the synagogue was a powerful man, and the people feared what he could do. And so therefore, they were very careful. And if you read the account, you'll see that the people waited until sundown before they brought their sick to Christ. Well, why do you think they waited? The president of the synagogue said, you don't work on the Sabbath. You don't heal on the Sabbath. And so what did they do? They waited till the Sabbath was over. That was the end of the day, the going down of the sun. Another point is made in Ephesians 4:26. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Depicting the end of the day. So we can see here that the day is determined, the end of the day is determined by the going down of the sun. And obviously, if that's the end of the day, the start of the next day occurs at practically the same instant. One day ends, the other one starts. Now, what we need to recognize is there is a basic principle that needs to be acknowledged. It is that God set the heavenly orbs as a giant clock, making the universe operate as a whole. Genesis 1:14. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons, for days and years." The sun for days and years, the moon for seasons, holy days, festive gatherings, and appointments and signals. So, in reality, God said, this is how you figure everything. First of all, you figure the day, we know, it's the rotation of the one-time rotation of the earth. In the year, of course, is the next designation. He said, well, you know, this is how it works. And we should realize that the earth is turning, and it takes about 24 hours for it, as we measure time, to make one rotation. In addition to it rotating, the moon is circling the earth. In addition to the fact that the moon is circling the earth, the moon and the earth are circling the sun. Now, this is how God wants us to measure things. And so, he says, look, the sun is for days and years, and the moon is for seasons, and this is what he is telling us. Now, in fact, people, right, you know, in making these presentations, people would bring up the fact, well, you know, God had this long day in Joshua 10. And what about King Hezekiah? Well, let's talk about that. What happened in Joshua 10, verses 12 and 13? Well, what God simply did is he stopped the clock. It's not really hard to understand this. If he stopped the clock on a Thursday afternoon, say, and it just stayed Thursday afternoon, the day didn't change. It was still Thursday. The men were there. They needed the extra time to complete the battle. And so this is what happened. It's not hard to understand that. Secondly, in Hezekiah, God, in effect, moved the sundial back. Now, for God to do this, it's just like a clock. You know, he reset the time, moved it back. He didn't change the day, because all of the heavenly orbs moved together in conjunction to the moving of the sundial. He moved the sun, and everything else in the universe moved with that. Now, how can you say that? Well, because everything in the universe moves as a unit. It doesn't move independently. This is, everyone recognizes this today. We, you know, because we are sophisticated, in our abilities to measure and look at things that maybe the people that came before us were unable to do. But they say 1 second is lost every 10 years. Well, okay. That's not really. As far as God is concerned, it's the rotation of the earth. Doesn't matter. The rotation of the earth around the sun changes at a rate of 10 seconds every 2,000 years. The solar year can now be figured on the present 365 1/4 day year with 11.232 minute shortfall. You see, what we're saying here is God's creation was consistent. He didn't change things. Now, once we recognize that we have this lack of time for the complete 365 1/4, we need to look at that, because this is an important little piece of information that we need to recognize. Multiplying that time, 11.232 times 128, we get 23.9616 hours. And you can see that's really close to 24. And this gives us the reason for subtracting a complete day at the end of this period of time. In other words, at the end of 128 years, instead of taking a leap year, you do not take it. If you use 129, you would have the 11.232 times 129, which is 24.1488. Now, the difference here between the two is it's a lot bigger deviation when you go with 129. And so this is the reason for using the 128. In addition to that, the 128-year cycle was chosen because it is a multiple of 4, thus simplifying the mathematics. In addition, if this error of 0.0384 were calculated, and that's a really little bit of time, were calculated, it would amount to 1.8 hours and 6,000 years, and they're not worth talking about, really. The solar calendar proves the biblical Sabbath. This is what I'm about to show you next, and this is an important understanding. It's something you have to realize. In looking at this, I thought, well, if I go back and I start in pieces of time that we know that God set up, which is the day, and then the next piece of time, of course, is the 7-day week. And so what I did was I started looking at creating a chart showing how the Sabbaths would occur starting on that very first year of the creation year. And so this is exactly what I did. I started the first week, as you see here, 7, and then 7 more days would be 14, 21, 28, etc. And when you'd get down to the end of the year, what would you find? You would find that you have used up 364 days of the year, but there's 365 days in a year. Well, that means we have an extra day, don't we? So what is going to happen? You see, a calendar, it doesn't just chop itself off. We look at calendars, we see the month of January, the month of February, and that's what we see. But in reality, the calendars should be running right together. It should be like a scroll in which we should be looking at a calendar. And instead of looking at individual months, we get this idea in our mind. So if you look at year 2, you'll see that the first Sabbath then, because there was a day left over from the first year, the first Sabbath is on the 6th, 13th, 20th. And the last Sabbath is on 363. So now we have 2 days to carry over. The third year, what that means is the first Sabbath is on the 5th, the 12th, the 19th. The last Sabbath is on the 362nd day. And you can see, we have a carryover of 3 days. Now, when we get to the fourth year, we're going to see something a little bit different. The first Sabbath, of course, with the three-day carryover, the first Sabbath is on the 4th, 11th, 18th. The last Sabbath is on 361st day. But this is the fourth year. This is a leap year, 366. So what happens on this year? We now you have to take 361 from 366, and you have a five-day carryover for this year. Well, it didn't follow exactly like you might think you would want it to follow, but this is the way it is. So the fifth year, we have the five-day carryover, means the Sabbath is on the 2nd, the 9th, the 16th. The last Sabbath, 359. Well, 59 from 65 is 6 days. So we have a 6 day carryover. That means in the sixth year, the first Sabbath is on the 1st, the 8th, etc. The last Sabbath is on 365th day. Well, what this means is the seventh year, it's like starting all over again. So you start on the seventh year. Well, you start with the first Sabbath on the 7th. And you get to the 8th year. Well, the 8th year now is also a 366-day year. And so what happens when you go into the 8th year? At the start of the 9th year, you'll have 3 days carryover. Well, we already have a 3 day carryover, so this isn't anything new. And in the 9th year, the count starts the same as the fourth year. And so we have the same carryover in the fourth year. Then we get to year 10. Well, we had a 4 day carryover. So the 10th year, the first Sabbath is on the 3rd, the 10th, the 17th, the last Sabbath, 360th day. And what results is a 5 day carryover to start the 11th year. So what does this mean? This is an important piece of information that we need to have. Actually, if you would continue to go through, you would see that there is only these 7 types of years. There aren't any other types. That's it. You either have a type 1 with a 1 day carryover, a type 2 with 2 day carryover, and I've listed these as how they will appear in the following charts. Type 3 has a 3 day carryover, 4 has a 4 day, type 5 has a 6 day carryover, type 6 has 0 day carryover, type 10 has the 5 day carryover. And I put these designations down so that it would be easier for us to work with them. Now, we'll go to the next calendar. And this, in fact, is a calendar. Now, here, this is where we find the first change from the initial presentation. This is an expanded calendar. And what I did here, I made the following changes. Initially, all I put down was the year 1, which is an AM year. Now, when you use that term AM, that means after man. In other words, it starts at creation and comes forward to us. And as a result of that, all I had was year 1, 365 days. The days of carryover was 1. The type was type 1, and the first Sabbath for that year would have been on the 7th. Well, we know that creation, the 7th day, was the first Sabbath. And the second year, you had a 2 day carryover, and it was a type 2, and the second Sabbath was on the 6th. We just went through that. But what I've added to this is the fact that you see a number 1, and it says Gregorian Sabbath. So that number 1 is the day of the Gregorian year that the first Sabbath will occur on. And in this case, It will occur on January 1st. And the year would be 4046. But of course, because the Gregorian year starts in the middle of winter and God's calendar starts in basically in the spring of the year, you have this is the fact that these first months of the Gregorian calendar really didn't exist. But the year, of course, was correct. And what I did is this calendar carries through for 6,000 years. I filled in the details, which I didn't have in the old chart 3. Now, how I got there and why it is accurate, we will be addressing at a different point in time. Now, obviously, what we did here in the first columns, where we're looking at the type of year, that was absolutely correct. Well, I added, for convenience, the first day of the AM year. The first Sabbath of the AM year was added in this particular chart number 3. And what I'm going to show you here is how this calendar repeated itself. Now, and when I'm saying repeating itself, I'm talking about the solar and the Hebrew calculated. Basically, we're really looking at the solar calendar here, not the Hebrew calculated. But you know, along with that, of course, I've added the Gregorian calendar in the mix. Now, as we look at this, you can see that you have a relationship here of when these days occur. And at the end of 28 years, we're going to find that the type of year is going to be exactly the same that we found when we started at the creation year. And you can see that if you look at year 29, you'll see a 1, 2, 3, etc. And so actually what this is really saying is every 28 years, the calendar repeats itself. And so you think, well, this can be used. This is an important thing. Well, in a way, yes. As we go through here, you're going to see how it works out. So if you take 28 and you double it, you get to 56, and you see again the same day type rotation of 1, 2, 3, 10, etc. The actual Sabbaths are the same, 7, 6, 5, 4, 2, 1. And it's exactly what's taking place. So now we add another 28 days, and we come to the 84th day. And in there, we see the same after the 85th year, we see the same Sabbath rotation, 7, 6, 5, 4, 2, 1. And this continues on. We look at year 112, that's another addition of 28, and we see, I'm just going through this so you can see that it actually works. And we see that the Sabbath rotation is the same, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, etc. Now, we get to the 128th year. And remember, we talked about this 128 years. We said, well, you know, we're going to have to make a change here. We can't continue to take that year, so we're going to have to not take it. And as you notice, I have added this purplish color here to highlight the 128th year. Sabbath rotation changes. And we no longer have what we would expect to have, so the rotation of the Sabbath day changes. As we go through here, if we would have followed the whole calendar all the way through, we'd come to 896. And you notice now I added a green color there, 896. And what we find on the 896th year, we find that we come up with the same Sabbath rotation that we had at creation. So it takes 896 years for the solar calendar to repeat itself. And you look at that, you can see the Sabbath days 7, 6, 5, 4, 2. Exactly the same. And we'll start all the way over again. This is important because it's going to affect how we are going to calculate different dates and times. Now, the reality is that this is an ongoing calendar. It's a really a very skeleton calendar because it doesn't show the days of the months and the lengths of the months or any of this information, but it shows the first Sabbath of every year. And with that information, that's all you need, and you can then fill in the additional information. So that's an important consideration, that this is a calendar that runs without stopping from creation to the present time, as we're going to see as we go through the study. Now, what I did here is I've given an example, and this example that I give is an example just to show how this chart 3 would work. The new chart 3, of course, makes things a lot simpler for us, but if we look at this, and you can see that it says the type of year, it's a type 1, which is a one-day carryover, so that means that the first Sabbath is on the second day of the year, of the solar year. Well, that would put it on the sixth. So the first Sabbath of the first AM Sabbath of 301 is on the sixth. It just so happens that if we go across, we can see that the Gregorian year, the first Sabbath for the Gregorian year is six. It's on the sixth day of January. And the year would be 946. You say, well, how can you say that? Well, we'll see as we go through this. Now, in the past, there's been this big thing about postponements. And, well, you know, how can you use postponements? And ridiculous statements that are made about postponements. The reason we have to postpone is because we can't have two fast days in a row, or that the sun has to be setting the moon has to show up on a Tuesday by a certain point in time, otherwise we move the calendar. Well, what the postponements basically are used is they're used to keep the calendar in alignment. Now, the average lunar cycle is 29.53059 days in a month. Therefore, in 12 months, it is only 354.36 days long. This is about 11 days short of the solar year of 365 and a quarter, making it necessary to add an additional month 7 times in 19-year solar cycle. This also regulates the number of days per year. The only purpose is to keep the Hebrew calculated calendar aligned to the moon's cycle of 19 solar years. Now, the postponements are basically there because ancient man didn't have, or our ancestors, put it this way, our ancestors did not have a computer. They didn't have the ability to store all of this information as conveniently as we. Perfectly clear, you're looking at your computer and seeing this information, and which allows you to, eventually it's going to allow you to look up any year you want to look up and find out what the calendar for that year was. But these men, at this point in time, didn't have that luxury. So, in order to be able to go into the middle of a calendar, they had to use these postponements. But you're going to see, eventually you're going to see, when I show the calendars for creation, etc., that these calendars do not move. They start at creation, and they never stop. They keep on moving day after day, week after week, year after year. And so therefore, once the calendar starts, it cannot change. It doesn't matter what postponements say. It doesn't work. Postponements are not necessary in this calendar explanation. I want to make that perfectly clear. I do not use postponements in the establishment of the calendar. So we can go on from there. The result, the postponements, as our ancestors used, this results in a six-year year types, 312-month year lengths of 353, 354, 355, plus 313-month years of 383, 384, and 385. The 13-month long years are 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17, 19 years of the 19-year time cycle. What we have here is what is necessary for this relationship of the sun, moon, and earth. That's what it amounts to. Now, for convenience sake, what I've done is I've set up a series of charts that are basically, when I initially did the study, they were quite important. But as the result that the study is complete, they are just handy pieces of information. And so I want everyone to be able to look at this and recognize this. Now, everything that we are working on comes from the first of Tishri, or the Feast of Trumpets. And as we look at this chart, we're seeing that on this chart, I have a Monday written in red. And the result of that Monday is that's the day of the week. Remember, we're dealing in weekdays and in weeks. And so first of Tishri would fall on a Monday. And as a result of that, we would see that the first Sabbath would be on the third, and it would go in increments of seven. And then if we go down, we're going to go through every day of the week. And so if we go down and we see we have a Sunday, now if we would use Sunday for the first of Tishri, we would find that it would throw the calendar off. So it's not a question of whether we would use Sunday. It can't be used. I mean, it is the actual progression of time eliminates the use of Sunday. Now, our forefathers, they recognized that, well, we can't ever find that the Feast of Trumpets would be falling on a Sunday, so they followed that. As we go through here, you can see the chart. We have Saturday, we have every day of the week, actually. And the important thing about this is when we get to this last chart here, which is calls out for a Tuesday. In other words, the first of Tishri, or Trumpets, is on a Tuesday. The interesting thing about this is it tells us that if this is the case, and by counting back in days, we find that the first Sabbath of that year is on the seventh. Now that should tell us something. What do we remember? I mean, the first Sabbath of creation is on the seventh. So this tells us that this is the relationship that you have to start with. I made some additional charts. Now these are the long year charts, and they go through the seven things, the 7 days of the week, and give you this information. Now the difference here, when you have the long year chart, is the fact that instead of only having one day or one length of year that could be used, that was the 354 length year, which is the nominal length of year as far as the calculated calendar is concerned, you basically have two different times that you can use it when you have a long year, and that is the nominal year of 384 and the extended year of 385. So you can see this, and you can see, oops, there's that 385. Well, I remember we talked about that a while back. So now let's go to chart number 5. Now we have already a tendency, we have already looked at chart number 5, but I want to go through a better explanation of chart number 5. This is a chart that was created or made by a gentleman named E.H. Lindell. And he did this chart in the early 1800s. Now, Mr. Lindell was not a priest. He was not a rabbi. He was, in their terminology for that time, he was called a bookkeeper. And so naturally he dealt with numbers. And when you consider that he figured this chart out, as we're going to see, this chart is absolutely accurate. It starts at creation and it comes forward. We're going to see how this works. It comes forward to the present day. And you can see that the days that are called out here are exactly the same days that we have on our calendar, the same dates, and the same day of the week. So when you look at this over 6,000 years, this is quite an accomplishment. And he did this, of course, without a computer. So let's take a look at some of the things that I've added as on this chart. You'll see this number 12 here. Well, I added that. The reason that I added that, and here you'll see a number 7 in the next column, and a number 3 in the far column. I had to renumber his charts because C.H. Lindell's charts are set up from a time that the Jews felt was the creation year. What was the beginning of the month of creation? And this is an important consideration, because in order for us to utilize that chart, we have to have a starting point, right? And there is only one starting point that we have in God's Word. And we find that in Exodus chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, "This month shall be the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you." So this is, in effect, a very important statement. And, you know, we're saying, well, he could have changed it, right? I mean, but is this a logical step? In other words, is this something that agrees with what we find, with other biblical statements that we find? For instance, in Malachi 3:6, he says, "For I am the Lord, I do not change." Thus God, in Hebrews 6:17 through 18, we find, "Thus God, determining to show more abundantly to the heirs of promise," that's us, the immobility of his counsel. Immobility, it's not movable. Confirmed by an oath, that by two immutable things in which it is impossible for God to lie, we might have strong consolation who have fled for refuge to lay hold of the hope set before us. So, pretty clear that once God sets things in order, he doesn't change them. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Hebrews 13:8. And you notice that I'm using not just Old Testament scriptures, but New Testament scriptures. James 1:17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Pretty clear. Jeremiah 33:20-21. Thus says the Lord, if you can break my covenant with the day and my covenant with the night, so that there will not be a day and a night in their season, then my covenant may also be broken with David my servant, so that he shall not have a son to reign on his throne, and with the Levites and the priests, my ministers. Well, this is not the topic for this presentation, but this just shows that what he's saying is the day, it's always been that way. You know, the earth, and this should be rather clear to us, the earth has never stopped rotating except for the times that we already talked about. But we have no record, period, of the earth stopping. And so the day continues. We're going to be looking at chart number 5. This was created by E.H. Lindo. He wasn't a rabbi or a priest or anything like this. He was just a bookkeeper back in the early 1800s. And when you consider the fact that he created this chart in 1800s without the use of a computer, you have to give him a lot of credit, because as we're going to see, his work is accurate starting from creation and coming forward over a 6,000 year period. The dates that he has in his chart, as we're going to present them, you're going to see are just an extension of that chart number 3, which is an ongoing, unbroken chart. And his work is in agreement with that chart 3. So you'd have to see that it's quite accurate. So let's take a look at his work. And you can see here that what I've done, I've done a few things with this chart. You can see there's a number 12 in the first column there. Under the Jewish year, you'll see 12, and then you'll see his number, 296 cycle. And then you'll see a red 6,939 days. Well, 6,939 days is the number of days that you will find in the second column, starting with 354. If you add 354, 355, 383, and you go all the way down to 383 at the bottom on the bottom line, and you added those up, you would have 6,939 days. Now we go over to the next chart, and you'll see a number 3, and it says cycle 300. And if you go to the next chart, you'll see a cycle 7, and you'll see a cycle number 304. Well, the third cycle plus 4 years gives you the seventh cycle, doesn't it? So you have the seventh cycle there. And if you take the years, you'll see that I did the same thing in the second chart there. You'll see 6,940 days. And that is the addition of the same numbers, 355, 353, 384, etc., down to 385. You add all those up, and you'll come up with that 6,940-day figure. In the third chart, which I have renumbered 7, you will see, if you add up those the same column of years, you will find that you have 6,941 days. You know, actually, this just demonstrates that basically this is what you're going to have. Here, I show chart 13, which is that's the last chart, 13, or in this case, it happens to be the start, because we're breaking into the middle of these charts. You will see that you have that same relationship added up, 6,940 days, 6,940, 6,939. And those are shows you that. In addition, you'll note that I have yellowed certain years. And the reason that I did that was to demonstrate an important time in history. And that important time is the Passover, occurring on the 14th. Passover occurs on the 14th of the first month. That date that you find there, the date following, in other words, you'll see that I yellowed out 355 Monday. The following year is 383, the first of Tishri is a Saturday. When you find that particular year will result in a Wednesday as the 14th of Nisan, the 14th of the first month. Now, what's so important about the 14th of the first month? Well, it just so happens that the 14th of the first month was the first Passover. That was the Passover of Exodus, of the book of Exodus. And I can clearly show you this as we go through the calendars. Not only was that the first Passover of Exodus, it was also the day that Christ was crucified, the day of the week that he was crucified. Wait a minute. He was crucified on a Friday. We all know that. Everybody knows that. Well, not everybody knows that. And the Bible doesn't know it. This is an important consideration. The Bible plainly states that Christ would be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. Figure it out for yourself. You can't have a crucifixion on Friday, have him going into the grave on Friday afternoon and coming out on Sunday. That's not 3 days and 3 nights. The Bible is quite specific about that. So I've just added this for your convenience, so that when you look at, when you study the calendar and you want to look at a particular year, you can go ahead and look at that year and see, well, was this an Exodus 12 year, or was this the year that Christ was crucified on? It's just an additional piece of information for you. Here, I'm showing the cycle number 1. Now, this is really an important cycle, number 1, because it is the cycle that we are going to need to start with. Why? Because it places the first Sabbath of that year on the 7th day of the week. In fact, it is the only one of the cycles that starts in this manner. So it's an extremely important. And again, I have also, you can see, I've also added some red numbers, and those numbers represent important things that took place in